I think I started to hit my groove a little bit because I realized that what I did made it possible for people to do what they do. And I really thrive in organization. And I feel like creatives and visionaries should be allowed to fly high and fly free, but somebody has to be tethered to the work, right? Somebody has to be tethered to the actual day-to-day management, the ins and outs. Like I've heard it said before that every Moses needs an Aaron and a Hur, right? Like everybody needs somebody that's like holding their arms up while they're getting the vision, the direction, the big game plan, the strategy, whatever. And if creatives, however you define them, are allowed to just exist in a space and an environment of creativity, because they have someone who is supporting them administratively and the functions of it, then I feel like everybody wins, right?
Hey, this is Damani Daniel, Chief Imaginator at The Event Nerd.
And this is Byron Sanders, President and CEO of Big Thought.
Welcome to Casually Creative, conversations about everyday creativity and nerdiness. What's going on, Cashmeres? And that means so much more today because we've got a very special, a luxurious guest on the show. Someone who exudes luxury. Yeah, luxury. She exudes luxury. And when she steps, really expensive rose petals bloom underneath.
Do they?
No.
Okay. Kind of like a forest spirit. Is that what we're talking about?
Like a sprite.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I don't know where I was going with
that.
I was going a different place because like cashmere is supposed to be like luxurious-ish and I don't know, whatever. Like, anyway, today I'm excited as I always am. By the way, this is Damani, one of the co-hosts of Casually Creative, and I'm super excited to be here hanging out with my boy
Byron Sanders. What's up, y'all?
We are actually going to restart this whole intro because I hate everything about it.
Yeah, man, I actually did a like pretty good. I came in tight, man. Come on, bro, let's roll.
Okay, let's roll.
This is good. It's great.
Excited to have a very special guest on the show today. My sister.
Hey, good people.
Like my sister. Yo. Like for real.
Yeah, because we get, you know what, you do need to clarify.
I do.
Black on here and just saying like my.
No, this is ER, not AH or A. This is ER, you know, my mama is her mama, my daddy is her daddy.
Yes.
I got like that kind of system.
But even then, you still got to go deeper though, because with Black folks, you know, you sometimes we got like play sisters and play
spiritual
cousins.
Spiritual fathers and spiritual like mothers. That.
Like, no, they are actual of the same lineage. No, that's what it is.
We are. Indeed.
I am the older, wiser of the two.
Older for sure. Yes. Yes.
And welcome to the show. My sister... Damani Daniel.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Welcome.
Thanks, Byron.
It's like a whole step routine just happened.
I did. They didn't see it though.
They didn't, but I felt.
I was waiting for one of you to throw rose petals, since clearly that is what is underneath my feet. According to
what is that? What do you think? You are the queen of Zamunda?
You told me starting out that I had.
You literally just
you
said
just
that.
Said.
I said they grew under her feet. I didn't say we threw them at her feet.
Oh, I missed that whole thing.
It was hard. It was a lot going on in that one. I was trying to follow it. Yeah.
I too was trying to follow it.
Mother Nature.
Let's just leave it where it fell. Let's just.
Yeah, let's go. Yep. So here's what's interesting. My sister is one of the most creative people I know. But she's one of the most structured people I know at the same time, which oftentimes people don't think go together.
That's true.
Right? They don't. So that's one of the things that I want to dig in. But before we even get there, Damani, let's back up.
Okay.
Let's tell us a little bit about your story. You know, you can skip over the parts that talk about how brilliant and great I was. But tell us a little bit about your story. Where did this journey...
You know what? I'm not sure that that was going to really take up a lot of her airtime today.
Definitely was not. Okay?
Okay. Okay. Yeah, that's cool. That's cool. It's like telling somebody, you know what? Don't worry about the things that make me look good that you were about to say. You're like, I wasn't gonna say.
But, I mean, but she might have just
definitely was not.
Okay, that's cool. That's cool.
Yeah. So my story. I'm a Brooklyn girl, born and raised.
Brooklyn, sit down.
What?
Stand up.
What? He just every time.
My bad.
Don't get cut on this podcast virtually. Right. Like, I mean, just
virtual.
Just no.
Yeah. I mean, Brooklyn, stand up.
Thank you. Stand all up, the Brooklyn. Way up. You know.
Yeah.
And I was a performing arts major for pretty much all of my academic life. Started dancing when I was 4. Maybe, and continued through high school, went to a performing arts high school, one of the top performing arts high schools in New York, and spent a very interesting year at Oral Roberts University in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and quickly returned to Brooklyn.
I stayed. I stuck it out.
Yeah, you did.
Imani, I actually didn't know that you went to ORU, too. Were y'all there at the same time?
We were. It was so funny because Damani and I look a lot alike, and because our names rhyme, people assume that we're twins. And so I remember my first week on campus, Damani apparently had gotten this reputation for being like a jokester or whatever on campus. It was my first week on campus, and a few people approached me and
were
like,
"Oh,
Damani is so funny. You put a wig on." Yes. And I was like, what? And it took me a minute. I was like, no, my name is Imani.
Which definitely didn't help.
Sister. Which was funny, right? And odd. Imani was on a Christian campus in drag,
like,
right?
The Christian
campus, you know? So, So I spent that year at ORU and quickly returned to Brooklyn because it just wasn't for me. And when I came back, my mom had made the decision to relocate to South Carolina and said, either you're coming with me or you're going to figure it out by the time I move. And I knew I wasn't going to South Carolina because I had just left Tulsa. Like, what are we doing? You know? And so I figured it out. And that began my formal, I guess, career in just administration.
So you were from being an assistant. The Big
kinda
Apple.
Just took off from there.
You moved away, went to school at the Praying Hands, right? The Praying Hands, that looks like a bunch of spaceships on one particular campus, right? Like they are about to all take off. That's right. And then you came back to the Big Apple, and your mama was like, look, I'm about to be out. And you're like, I am going to make it. So it was like, you're gonna make it after all. Except you were just like actually coming back home.
It was
like a coming back home, and I got to try and make it in the Big Apple. So this is what we about to do. We're going to roll the dice, see what's up.
Yes.
So what'd that look like?
It was exactly like that. I didn't realize until probably a few years ago that I was like on my own from 19, right? It didn't register to me at the time that like at 19, it was like, and figuring it out meant getting an apartment, getting a job, like getting my, all of that in a city that is one of the most expensive places to live. Like, you know, and so... Yeah, it was a lot. And so it looked like me just hitting the ground running and reaching back out to some contacts that I had made So let me go back. Damani and I were a part of a program in high school called I Have a Dream that was sponsored by Paul Tudor Jones. And if we maintained a certain grade point average throughout the school year, we were guaranteed summer internships at Fortune 500 companies. And so my summer internship
was at Goldman Sachs.
Burlap? Gosh, you're so out of touch, Yes, sacks. Yes,
okay. Woven with gold.
Got it.
That gold, get filled
gold,
with potatoes.
Actual gold people, men and women.
It's well, it's actually gold man. Gold man.
Sacks.
Sacks.
Got it.
So yeah, so I got an internship there and returned there the following summer. So I think I started there my sophomore year, came back and did an internship my junior year, and then had an opportunity to work part-time there in my senior year of high school and in their human resources asset management division. And when I came back, I was like, well, you know, let me see. Maybe my contacts are still there. And so I reached out and many of them weren't. But then it was just a game of moving parts where this person connected me with that person. And that, and so I got a job at a mortgage firm as a receptionist and found a program that allowed like low income housing for first time, out of the house, you know, kind of thing. So just it was serendipitous and God ordained, I think, that things just aligned literally the week before my mother left, where I had a job and I had an apartment. Yeah. It was scarcely furnished, but I had a bed. And I just
did you reach out to like this place called Goldman Sachs and it's which, you know, it's like an Irish firm where they make burlap potato bags and something like that. And then,
or something.
And did your mama help you at all? So you out here.
No, to be fair, there were a lot of things. So like my father had passed away some years prior. And in hindsight, I think we all realized how divisive grief can be, you know, that I think that we all went off in our own directions. And I realize now that it was because the way that we all processed grief. But at the time, it just looked like everybody was pursuing or doing, like Damani was off in college in Oklahoma, making things happen. Like, you know, my mom thought it was really important for her to leave New York City with our little sister to help her kind of move forward. And so in hindsight, I realized that while it felt like, and in some degree was abandonment, that really it was my mom was trying to save herself. You know, like New York was my father. Everything about New York reminded her of my father. And I feel like she couldn't breathe, you know, and so she needed to be in a place where she felt like she could start over. But at the time, I don't think that she had the capacity to communicate that. So no, no help came from her other than prayers, which another thing in hindsight, I think was the best thing that she has done for any of us. But she didn't have any help to give. So there were no financial resources. There were no, you know, connections. She came with me and to so my that, appointments, that's actually, but there was no.
That's actually more of my point. But then, you know, you just, you know, illuminated something that I think is very interesting too, right? Like, Damani, what did Sorrell say about the mother of invention, right? Indeed.
It's necessity. Yeah. Yeah, the mother. Well, the crux of creativity is necessity. That you can't.
There you go.
No, it's until you're denied something. There we go. It's that you don't have to be creative until you
are
denied.
I think the certainty was something that you were denied, right? Like you came back and to the point. You know, it's not like New York City is just like Mayberry, where you just come on back, guys. We'll keep the light on for you. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, no.
So you get back to New York, you've got your job as a receptionist, and does that feel right? Like, because you're a 20 plus year administrative professional now. So we'll
yes.
track that as we continue going on. But was it one of those moments when you sat down in the receptionist chair and you looked around and your fingers laid upon the keyboard on the typewriter or whatever technology you had at the time that you were like, oh, I'm supposed to administrate?
What was No, in part because the environment was toxic, right? And I worked for the president of the mortgage firm. He just wasn't a nice human. And I was also younger than the person who was there and came in at a position that she felt like she should have had, right? She was a part-time kind of admin. And yeah, so that led to just more toxicity in the environment. And Yeah. And so that, it didn't last very long. I actually got fired from that position. I don't even think I made it a year there, honestly. And then I'm like panicked because now I have a rent. Like I have my own home that I have to maintain. And so a series of things happened, right? Lost the job, wound up getting another job at a seriously low salary. And I was a para in a school for children with special needs. And it was great and really fulfilling, but I didn't make any money to the point that I couldn't afford the apartment that I had just gotten. And so I got evicted. And there was a woman at my church who graciously allowed me to move in to her 3-bedroom apartment with she and her daughter. And that was life-saving for me because at this point I was in New York on my own. Nobody was there. I had cousins, but nobody who could kind of step in and say, hey, here, help. And again, because of the divisiveness of grief, everybody of my immediate family was off doing their own thing, living their own lives, and lines of communication at that point had already broken down. So no, it wasn't this moment of awakening, like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing with my life. That didn't come until very many years later. Wow. So, yeah.
So you're in New York. There's grace that's been extended to you to live with someone else.
Yeah.
You've got a new job. How long does it last for you? Keep us going down this kind of this journey. Because already we're in a very varied journey that's led you to the
place. For sure. I was a para for a year and a half.
And when you say para, define that for our listeners real quick.
So I was a one-to-one para for a boy who had cerebral palsy. And I was with him every day in the classroom. So it was a gen ed special ed school. So in the classrooms, it was a mixed population of both gen ed students and special ed students. And I was his one-to-one para. So I was with him every single day, making sure that, you know, he had whatever he needed, you know, lunch, taking him to the bathroom, cleaning him up, and then also assisting the teacher with the other students that were there. So I was basically like his support for the school day. And so that lasted about a year and a half. And it was really hard for me to make the transition back into corporate, you know, back into administration, because when people at that time, people weren't as, I think, open to soft skill sets, to seeing how work in one area could translate into another. So they would see my resume. And it's like, oh, you worked at Goldman. Oh, you have this experience.
They didn't get it.
You work in a school.
Yeah.
Like, I don't. And now you're saying you're going to be my assistant. Like, yeah, they didn't get it. And even though I believe that the skill sets that assistants possess are transferable, they didn't see how, like, they, so it took a while. And I just had to kind of get in where I fit in. Right. And so I took a position at, an agency in New York. And it was, again, one of those low paying positions, but I was secure as far as my living conditions were concerned. So it wasn't, I could afford to take a position that paid less because I didn't have this high overhead.
Were you wanting to do that? So were you taking that position because it was a pay bump for where you were as a para, or because it felt more in line with the direction that you wanted to go?
Both and.
Because they're both low, okay.
Yeah, it was both. And so, yes, it was more than where I was as a para, but I also knew that the education system wasn't where I was supposed to be.
Yeah.
You know, my mom, lifelong educator, my dad in some respects was an educator. And so, but I knew that that wasn't my calling. And so it was just, it was really about me looking for that entry point back into corporate America, the world of administration. And I got it. And
so, so I am interested though, like why?
Yeah.
Imani, why? why administrative roles? Like, you know, because when you came back, right, you had an internship, you were just going to reach out, kind of see what was there. Why'd you say, you know what, I think I want to, one, not only do I think I'm good at this, but this is the thing that I want to do. I knew necessity was part of it because you had to get started, had to get grounded. Why'd you keep flexing in this space?
I think that, so I guess I'd say like I backed my way into it a little bit. Like I think that there are some people who, this is all I've ever wanted to do, or this is all I ever wanted to be. And then they work at being really proficient in that thing. For me, I realized that it was something that I was just highly skilled at, really good at, bringing order to chaos, organizing. And that led me, the more that I explored it, I realized that it was like this gift that I have to just order things and organize things. And now, like in later years in life, when I look back, I realize how much I was groomed for that, right? Okay. I think that being a middle child had something to do with it, right? Like you're hinged between, you know, the older and the youngest, and, you know, sometimes playing peacekeeper, peacemaker, or just trying to make sure everything is how it should be. And then also just like the work that I did, like we were raised to be like servant leaders, I guess that would be the popular term, like in our church. So we served in like youth group, and my mom worked very closely with the pastor of the church where we grew up. And so she handled a lot of administrative functions for her. So it was being up under my mom, because I was very, very close to her, and seeing her, how she navigated and how she moved. And I think that the church that we grew up in, the pastor had this extreme need for like perfectionism, amongst other things. But what it taught me was like attention to detail, and, you know, focusing on the minutiae of things. And even though she went the wrong direction with it, I feel like it instilled something in me that God later like redeemed, and showed, you know, showed me that these were skill sets that were actually good if they were used in the right way. I think I realized that I was really good at it. And that led me to see that not only was I good at it, that I'm really gifted in this. I'm really gifted to do this.
When did you realize you were good at it?
Probably the first time someone pursued me for a role. Right? It was that affirmation every other time it was me going out looking for a job. But I think the first time I had a headhunter find me, because like I said before, when I was trying to make that transition from education back into the corporate, they didn't see how those skill sets were transferable. So for somebody to reach out to me and to get it, it was affirming. And I was like, you know what? I could make a career out of this. And I remember the day that I like Googled, or maybe it was like Ask Jeeves. Excite. I don't know. But And looked that I looked up highest salary for an administrative assistant or something like that. And I saw what it was, and it was so far from where I was at the moment. And I set a benchmark, like by the time I end my career, I'm going to be there. And I just got after it.
I love the stories when people talk about something that came from a traumatic experience, right? You talk about how it was not the best thing in the world working for the sacks of gold. And you know, then moving on and finding another fit. And even amongst, you know, in the midst of financial hardship, right, you still were good at solving these problems.
Yeah.
You're still in the mix. You're still doing your thing. You knew how to do this thing. But then, and then church, right? Even going further back when you had, you know, an experience where it sounded like, I'm not going to pry, but it sounded like, yeah, there are probably some things that I didn't like necessarily about being in a few of those situations. But, right.
That's accurate.
But you build these skill sets in the thick of it. And in the thick of it, sometimes you don't really have the space to take stock of all that you've built and quite frankly, just how good at it you are. And then there's a moment that happens. And that's why I'm glad Damani asked that question. Sometimes it is that person who you don't know, who doesn't owe you anything, who just objectively needs a good person in their life. And they're like, you. And you're like, me? Moi?
Yeah. For sure. For sure. And then the rest of my career, I feel like, you know, now that you say it, I've had those affirming voices in my life for the rest of my career. I went on and worked at an ad agency, was on the team that developed the campaign for a major liquor brand, traveled to Paris to pitch it to Louis Vuitton, Moet Hennessy, and we won that account. And to know that I was like a pivotal.
Damani, you gotta say it. Okay.
I would expect me to say it.
What are Damani? Y'all doing right now?
Flex.
Yes.
Yep. we have a tendency on this show that whenever someone drops the flex, we want to acknowledge it, not because we want to embarrass you, but because people need to know when flexing happens, you should celebrate the flex. So continue. So whenever else you flex, and I know your story, so there are going to be a couple more of them.
I appreciate the head nod. Thank you. I was, you know, able, privileged and fortunate to be a part of that team. And, but it was because the executive that I was supporting at the time said to me, hey, we need you in on these creative meetings, because my nature is very much behind the scenes. I don't want to be out in the front talking and doing all of the things. I want to be making the photocopies. I want to be typing up the meeting minutes. I want to be, you know, inputting Excel. Like, I want to do all of those things. And so he came to me and asked me to be a part of the meeting, and I said something, and I remember him having this light bulb moment. Like, I remember his eyes kind of like lighting up, because I was able to give him a perspective. He was a, you know, psychology, you know, PhD from the UK, who, you know, came over to New York to fulfill this role and didn't understand Black culture in the context that I did, but they were pitching to this demographic of that, right? And so I was in this, he asked me to be in this meeting. I'm in this meeting, I give him a perspective, and he's like, you know, you should really be doing more than just like filing my expense reports and booking my travel. And so, so throughout my career, I've been blessed to have these affirming voices that really push me to do things that are more than, I guess you could say, the box that I sometimes put myself in. And so that's been a blessing for sure.
I love it, Damani.
So, I mean, I love it too. So, what were you finding? So, as you're discovering, or as you're being invited into these conversations, where you're being asked to do more than just file expense reports, just book travel, are you finding fulfillment in that, or are you finding yourself, you know what, I'd really rather be back on the other side of this door?
I think I started to hit my groove a little bit, because I realized that what I did made it possible for people to do what they do. And I really thrive in organization. And I feel like creatives and visionaries should be allowed to fly high and fly free, but somebody has to be tethered to the work. Right. Somebody has to be tethered to the actual day-to-day management, the ins and outs. Like I've heard it said before that every Moses needs an Aaron and a Hur, right? Like everybody needs somebody that's like holding their arms up while they're getting the vision, the direction, the big game plan, the strategy, whatever. And if creatives, however you define them, are allowed to just exist in a space and an environment of creativity, because they have someone who is supporting them administratively and the functions of it, then I feel like everybody wins, right? Like I'm a big idea visionary, but I say that like I distill vision. I get it down to the very like actionable items that allow people to execute on whatever their idea is.
So if we're trying to distill this, right? And we're calling out, as you know, the purpose of this podcast is we talk about creativity. We're finding creativity. And you just talked about how, you know, creatives, and I'm using the capital C, need a certain space in which they can do their thing. You know what I'm saying? And there's a lot of truth to that, right? Because we were thinking creatives in the traditional sense, and still the agency that it seems like you bring to your job, to your role, to this set of responsibilities, it seems like your creativity has actually made space. It has made paved the way for you to go to new and different places that I think a lot of times when people hear executive assistant, admin, they don't usually think about the kinds of things that you've been able to do in your career. So
and I'll say I'm guilty of that. Like as your brother, I'm guilty of, you know, at varying stages much earlier. Like I don't think this, nor have I thought this for a while, but when you told me that I'm gonna be an executive admin or I'm gonna be someone's assistant, I was like, my daddy ain't raised you to be nobody's assistant. Right. This is the thought process. Like, no, you a leader. You ain't assisted nobody.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's been a running joke in our family. And my mom has laughed. I think she was the first one to say the joke. And she's like, you know, it's so at one point, you know, Damani is this huge, successful entrepreneur now. But at one point, she's like, you know, the irony that my one child who did not finish college makes the most money. That baffles me, right? Like it just, you know,
When you told me one time, like, you know, when you were in that New York, when you were, was it EA to the chief of staff for Sesame Street, I was like, oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, I've had some, I've worked for some really great executives, and but you're right, Byron. I don't think that people always give admins, the administrative roles, the credit that they're due. And sometimes that translates monetarily, right? That there are some people who still way underpay their admins because they see it as this kind of like minuscule role. When honestly, if you left most executives to their own devices, they would fail at their jobs. They would, because like most of them can't understand their calendars, their scheduling. Like I had an executive, someone that I support say to me once, like, I'm so sorry. I know I said I wasn't going to bug you on vacation, but you are proving your worth right now because, and it was the simplest thing that needed to be done. And he's like, I've spent 2 days trying to do this. And I was like, I got it. Give me a second. And within 30 minutes, it was done, right? But it's because your brain doesn't work the way that mine does, you know? Like, I'm not in here trying to manage hedge funds or trying to do, right? Like, you do what you do, let me do what I do. But understand that your success is so linked and tethered to me. And I think that the best relationships between an executive and their admin are ones who understand that.
I even use different language when I'm introducing my partner into conversations, like when I'm bringing her into threads, Linda Matthews, shout out to Linda Matthews, everybody. Linda, yo.
Hey, Linda.
Always.
Linda.
Hey, I got to shout out Linda. Cause you know, I'm like, hey, Byron, back in the before days. Byron, want to grab a beer? Never mind. What am I talking about? Hey, Linda, I want to grab a beer. Byron.
So it's so funny. We yes. talked about this before, but Damani used to think that I was like, you know, throwing shade. You know, like I was high siding, right? Because I'd be like, no, let me link you up with Linda so we can get this done. He's like, bro, if you don't want to hang out, I was like, no. The specific reason why I am bringing Linda in is because I actually do want to connect. Because if I do not, straight up,
it's not going to happen.
And you know what? And when we say it will happen, it shall not. It shan't happen because I will absolutely double book. Nope. I will put it on the wrong time zone. Like something's going to go wrong, guaranteed.
When people ask me like, oh, what do you do? And like, yes, I could say executive assistant, personal assistant, and those things, that's true. But I manage people's lives. I do. I manage their lives. Whatever portion of their lives they give over to me, I manage that. Sometimes it looks like family and estate management. Sometimes it looks like calendar management. But like, I manage your life so that you can do.
I have opened up the whole part of my life to Linda. She's my executive associate. I am her partner. Like that's how we go. That's how we roll. Yeah, right. Otherwise, I mean, that's what's honest. Mm-hmm. That's what's actual. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yep. Yeah.
So Imani, you've got this, we've talked a lot about the administrative mm-hmm. side of you, and how creativity expresses itself there. But I'm obviously going to bring into the conversation this whole other side that's been kind of centered around fashion, that's been centered around kind of your creative expression there. Talk a little bit about that. Because I mean, right now you're sitting recording from your closet surrounded by an array of pretty clothes.
I smell
we got to dig into this a little bit.
I smell
bit.
A flex coming.
Tell us a little bit about this.
There is a flex on the way.
Yeah, you should. I was setting up the flex.
There's
right
definitely flex no right flexing. We'll no intentional that. Flexing okay. that is coming. So yeah, I one of these moments where I just had someone affirm me and, see things that I wasn't seeing. And so a few years back thought that I wanted to be a wardrobe stylist, and I met a woman in New York who was a celebrity wardrobe stylist. My best friend and I attended, panel for like Black women creatives or something like that. And she was the featured speaker. And afterwards I went up to her and I was like, I'm so inspired by you, because at the time I wanted to merge faith and fashion, because I felt like they were two things that people thought didn't go together. And she, if not solely responsible, was largely responsible for intersecting fashion and sports, and kind of monetizing the power of Black athletes and what they could mean for brands, for fashion brands. And listening to her, it was like I had this example in front of me of someone who took these two worlds that before had not merged or come together. And now everybody's looking at it like, of course, these two things go together. And so I looked at that mm-hmm. like, wow, this is so inspiring. This is what I want to do with faith and fashion. And so she said, hey, yeah, give me a call. And I don't know if she really expected me to follow up or if it was just a thing that she said, but I did. And that turned into an internship and started working for her agency. And I want to say maybe about 3 months in, we were on a job one day and she pulled me aside and she said, you're not a wardrobe stylist. This is not your thing. This is not what you're supposed to be doing. And when she said it, she definitely had a way with words. She was very stern. And I took kind of offense to it because I felt like she was in that moment telling me like I wasn't good enough.
You don't know me.
As like a wardrobe stylist. But again, her opinion is highly regarded and you've been doing this for so long. So if you're telling me that this is like, I don't have it to do this. And she said, what you are is a support too. She was like, you're more of a brand manager. You have ideas, she said, but the day in, day out of putting shirt with pants, figuring out what's, she's like, that's not what you do. And so then that opened up this whole other portal to me that I didn't even know existed. I had never heard the term brand manager, brand strategist.
What does it mean? What is it?
It's more of managing people's lives, right? Like it's just So what I wound up doing was I
intersecting fashion and what you
already did. And I became support to fashion, to creatives in the fashion industry. So they had ideas that they wanted to bring to their clients, or if they had this pitch for their client, most of their clients were professional athletes. And so they would want to bring this professional athlete to the forefront of the fashion industry or create a brand partnership with a particular fashion house. And there, and so they would, we would have these sessions. We'd sit in the conference room, and they just kind of like dump all of their ideas, and I would just be listening and just extract what they meant from what they were saying. It just, it kind of took off from there, and that redirection is pretty much responsible, I'd say, for where I am in my career right now, and the people who I have had the privilege of working for, because I feel like I would have spent a lot of time, wasted a lot of time pursuing something that I was not supposed to be doing. And so sometimes I think we look at affirmation like it's always that like pat on the back, like good job. And sometimes it's that kick in the back that's like, no, right? And so she was affirming in that way, not in this comforting sense of you're doing so great, you're so awesome, right? Like, but if we're going to affirm people, what we should be affirming is the truth. And the truth in that moment was that this is not what you're supposed to be doing. And she was able to kind of redirect me. And from there, I think that something that I learned from our dad is, you know, life moves at the speed of relationships and how important it is to cultivate relationships. And I know that that's something that I'm really good at. And so I've just been able to build really, really strong relationships with the people that I support. And they trust me enough to then recommend me to people in their circle to support.
Right.
Right. So, yeah.
So what I think is interesting is like you've had such a heck of a journey, right? You've talked about the many different places and spaces you've been. By the way, are you even allowed to talk about some of the people that you've done some of this this intersection of fashion and entertainment? And,
For me, more important than working for the athletes was that I want to be clear in that I was supporting their key stylists, right? Absolutely. And so I don't want it to be confused, like I did this, right? And so Rachel Johnson and the Thomas Faison Agency was where I got my start. She was the woman that I met in that panel for Black creatives who gave me that internship. Through working with her agency, I met Keisha McLeod, who I did the bulk of my work with. Keisha McLeod's clients include Serena Williams, PJ Tucker, James Harden, Andre Iguodala. Insert name after name after name, right? I had the pleasure of working for Chimunya Wolf, who is a Danish Zambian stylist who now is the, I believe she's the chief of staff of Kevin Durant Enterprises. So I did some work with Kevin when he was in Oklahoma City. I believe it was the year that he won. Was it the year he won? No, not wasn't the year he won MVP, MVP but did some work with him. Christian Choi, another amazing stylist, did some work with him for Mary J. Blige one year. For me, it's important that like I have, like, yes, I've worked with these celebrities, these athletes, these, you know, but I've done that in support of people who put me in a position to win. And I always want to give honor to them because it was their affirming, it was their guidance, yeah. It was their, you know, in many respects, it was their correction. I remember being an intern, barely making any money, but the knowledge was invaluable. Yeah. I remember being yelled at because I didn't get things right, or, you know, it was grunt work. It was coffee runs. It was go to Kinko's and make these copies.
Right.
It was shine these shoes. It was, and doing all of those things really, really well. I treated those menial tasks the same way that I did when I was trusted with credit cards, with unlimited budgets and keys to clients' homes and, you know, all of those things. And so, yes, I have had the pleasure of working with some amazing people, some amazing organizations, print work for publications, a Sprint commercial, like just really, really, really amazing opportunities that if I would have been stuck and dead set on being a wardrobe stylist, I don't know that that the things would have resulted the way that they did, you know, because I think that I provided something that interns previously couldn't give them, because the interns were in it because they wanted to be a wardrobe stylist, right? But the trust that they were able to give to me was because they knew that I had this background in administration, in, you know, corporate America, and being able to bring that into this creative space helped them to do their work more efficiently. And it got to the point where they would just trust me to do things. Like, I've been to Paris, is my favorite city, hands down.
Yeah.
I've been there 5 times. Every single time I've been there, it's been because of work. I have never spent a dime of my own money going to Paris. But it's just like, you know, like there's a scripture that says, you know, our gifts make room for us and put us before great men. And I believe that operating humbly, but also excellently in my gift, really afforded me these opportunities.
Yo, I love that. And Paris is theoretically, you know, one of my favorite cities as well. you know, conceptually, I can see it being one of my favorite too. It is. Damani, when you gonna take me to Paris, bruh? Like, you know, make this happen.
I mean, I'm turning 40 this year.
We do have an international set of cashmeres, though.
It's true. We have cashmeres all over the world.
All over the world.
Okay, so Damani, do you feel like what you did for these stylists, the ways in which you supported them, was that a role that previously existed? What I mean by that is, did you fill a role, or did your experience in administration create a role that they didn't know that they needed prior to you showing up?
I think it expanded a role.
Okay.
There was a need, right? And there were people who were doing it to some degree, but I think it expanded it in that it showed them that they needed it to exist as something separate, not as a line item or a part of someone else's description, not we need to get this done, so just make it, you know, put it on this person's list of responsibilities. Because at the first agency that I worked for, like, she had an office manager, Melanie, who's, you know, still a really good friend of mine. She was her office manager. So she handled, you know, like the administrative things and the task of paying invoices and, you know, all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So I was able to come in and be like a secondary support to Melanie. If Melanie had to leave the office for whatever reason, I remember one time they had to go on a staff retreat. I was in the office by myself because they could trust me to do Melanie's role. Then it was also this rapport, because of what I learned from relationship building with my father. I think it was also this rapport that I had, that I was able to develop with their clients, that made them comfortable enough to bring me along with them when I was on set. Because at no point have I ever coveted their world, their life, their, right? Like, they could just trust me to come in, get the job done. I don't get starstruck. I don't really care. Not that I don't care, but like,
no, I could tell.
Yes, when you are who you are.
And you first saw me, you know, like, you didn't react. It wasn't the normal reaction that I
And no, yeah, because normally when people react, they react out of horror as if they've just seen Quasimodo.
Yeah, it was. I mean, she just held it. You really held it all together, Imani. I was really impressed.
Yeah, you know, really.
Did you hear the list of the people that through her relationship she's had the opportunity to work alongside, and yeah. You're the one that she's gonna get Star Trek from?
Peers, all peers. I understand, and you know, she had a lot of practice, so it's not surprising that she was not.
Oh,
you know,
You are a Forbes published author. I mean,
that is true. I'm on the internet.
I'm
Forbes. Yeah. Your Forbes.com has a Byronia Sanders cycle.
Listen, Sanders' name carries some weight. You know, you drop it in the right room. People are like, oh, you know, Byron. Okay.
Right.
Like it's automatic validation. Like, you know,
my daughter's fifth grade classroom, you say Byron's around the corner.
I was about to say, if you go to your daughter's fifth grade classroom and say Byron, you get nothing. If you say Bear, all day.
No, that's true. I'm not. That's not even. That's yeah, not. Even, that's not. That's actually not inaccurate. It's very true.
But yeah, so back to the original. I think it expanded a role, and I think it's something for a person to trust you with their work and to know that you are going to approach it with the same level of dedication and excellence that they would, and to know that they don't have to worry about you trying to steal clients or, you know, being in competition with them. Like I'm really here to support you. And I don't know that that was something that they had experienced before. And I believe, because they've told me, that they appreciate it. So I love that.
Okay.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, Byron. No, you go. No, you.
I was just going to say, define creativity.
Oish. I think that's relative, right? I think so. Creativity for me.
So many needs for you. Everybody's got a different opinion. We just like to hear what yours is.
That's right.
Creativity for me is a spark. You know, that's how it starts for me. It's an initial spark that, because I am super analytical, I then obsess over, and it becomes this larger, bigger idea. But it really just begins with just this like droplet, and most times it comes through conversation. Creativity to me is collaboration. It is coming together with other people, not always like-minded, listening, and then allowing your imagination to kind of run from there, not putting kind of parameters or guidelines or structure around it initially.
Yeah, I
think just letting it kind of be, and for me it happens through conversation, where someone will say something, and I know that is something that has made me, I'd say, invaluable to the people that I support, because I listen and then I respond with just whatever. For me, I'm a person of deep faith, and so for me it's, I respond with whatever I feel like the spirit of God it gives me. And sometimes it's a really great idea that turns out to be their next big whatever. And sometimes it stays in like the think tank for a while. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it kind of percolates and, you know, it might not ever see the light of day, but for me, creativity comes through conversation. I'm sure I'll, you know, get off this recording and throughout the week, something that you would have said, I'll, you know, send Imani a message like, hey, you know, you should really do a blog on, because that's just how it comes.
Yeah.
It really is just, it feels that random, but I know it's not random because it's connected to a conversation that I had previously.
That's dope.
Yeah.
That's dope.
Thanks.
All right, Imani, you've heard this show, and you've heard the show because, you know, I'm your brother, and if you haven't heard it, then I'm going to be mad at you.
No, I have listened to the episodes. I have. I'm very, very, very proud of you guys. I'm very, very, very proud of you guys.
Aww. Aww.
Thank you. Well, now it's that time of the show. It's time for for the show in rapid fire. We're throwing things at you, coming at you. Hot fire, out your brainstone. That's not a thing.
What?
I don't know.
Out your brainstone.
This is why I've denied that we were related in previous seasons of life. Because
Lord.
Okay, it's time for Quickly Creative.
Oh, I'm not gonna cry. I'm not gonna cry. I'm not gonna shed no tears. No, I'm not gonna cry. I'm not gonna cry. Cause Quickly Creative.
I was definitely not expecting that to be the follow-up to the segment announcement. I was expecting like Funk Flex bombs dropping, like something. Mm-mm. But that was something.
That's right. That was something. Mm-hmm. You know, because anybody who works with in any degree of proximity to Mary J. Blige deserves to be reminded of that. And so now this will live on as long as the internet is alive.
Mm.
Don't forget it.
Yeah.
Honey.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't think I am able to.
Here we go.
All right, here we go. You ready?
No, but let's do it.
Let's go. Whiskey with an E or without an E?
I'm sorry, what?
Whiskey with an E or without an E?
Oh, see, that shows you how much I like whiskey, because I was about to say neat. Because that's what I said. Like, I said whiskey neat or not neat. But with an E.
Okay. Ballet or modern?
Ooh. Modern.
Upside down or inside out?
Upside down.
Bed-Stuy or Fort Greene?
Fort Greene all day.
Fort Greene.
Personal assistant or executive assistant?
Personal executive assistant.
Okay. Favorite thing about New York City?
That as soon as you walk out your front door, culture just smacks you in the face. You don't have to go searching for it. It's really just that's, right that's there. Real.
That's fair. Favorite thing about Texas?
My family.
Oh.
Favorite word or phrase?
Phrase, all the things.
Arc de Triomphe or the Luth?
Arc de Triomphe.
Physical letter or an email?
Ooh, the efficient assistant in me wants to say email. But my grandfather wrote me letters till the day that he died. Mm. So the sentimental side of me, there is something special about physical letters.
That's right.
All right. And favorite nail color or design that you've had to date?
Oh, gosh. What kind of... Is that the final question? Is that what we're going out on?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. What it is.
Favorite nail color.
Or design.
This might be the most important question we've asked today.
I don't think so, but...
You don't know our listeners. The listeners want to know.
They need
favorite
to know.
Nail color. It's called Funny Bunny.
Okay.
Funny Bunny. All right.
Who makes Funny Bunny? Okay. Where you find that at?
I mean, are we giving free promo? Are they sponsoring this episode?
Yeah, they might.
I mean, they might. Come on. After you drop your name, you know what I'm saying?
Okay. Funny Bunny is by OPI.
Got it.
Thank you. OPI.
Listen, you see how my brain works? I'm sitting here trying to make sure I'm brand managing right now. I'm trying to make sure that y'all not out here.
No, I appreciate that.
You know?
And we're teasing it out. You teasing know, it out.
Just, OPI, you know, you're welcome. Listen.
I want y'all to secure all the bags.
I was about to say, we're putting that on reserve. Oh. Consider this layaway.
We want to secure all the sacks. Yeah. Not just Goldman's.
Not just Goldman's sacks. We're talking about all the sacks.
It's so weird. It is. Okay, I'm gonna move on.
The emphasis matters, does it not?
It does. It really does.
You guys are crazy. No, but I do want to say this in all seriousness, in the same way that my career has taken the journey that it has because someone affirmed me, I definitely want to affirm you guys in this space. I think it's amazing what you guys are doing, that you are two Black men who are discussing creativity in the varied way that you are. that you have ventured into this podcast space, that you are dedicated husbands and fathers and business owners and all of, like, it's amazing to see. Representation matters. And so my hope and prayer for you guys is that your reach through this podcast would just expand so that more Black men can see that we belong in every single space that exists. That to me is what this represents, that we belong everywhere. There is no place of the earth, no place of the world, of the universe, that Black people, Black men do not belong, and more than belong, that they do not, that they're not worthy of, like, leading, right? Mm-hmm. That we're capable and worthy of leading in spaces. Yeah. So that's what this podcast represents for me. So I'm super, super proud of you guys. I'm really grateful that, you know, you guys are connected and that you're offering this gift kind of to your listeners and to the world. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Mom. That's what I call her.
You can't. I'm going to breathe that in. Thank you, Imani.
Yeah.
I really mean that, genuinely. Affirmed, received.
Thank you. I'm glad.
So, Ma, this is the part of the show where you get to brag on yourself. I know you like to brag on yourself behind the scenes, but I do want you to brag on yourself, especially because you started some new things recently. Like you were the new place. I want you to brag on yourself. Talk about all the things that's going on in Imani.
Yeah.
A. Daniel's life.
Yeah. So I am a daughter and a sister and an aunt, which is like my favorite role of life. My nephews are the loves of my life. Shout out to Ezekiel and Isaac and Taylor and Tyler and Dale Anthony, all five of you. I love you. And I just started a new position with an organization here in Dallas, Dallas Truth, Racial Healing and Transformation. Really
former podcast guest.
Yes. Jerry Hawkins, our executive director, was a former podcast guest. There's some other people that you really need to get on here who worked with our organization.
Hulk.
Yeah. But shout out to them. I'm really excited about the work. It's an amazing team. I realized that my last corporate position, I sat in a meeting and I said to God, like, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, I was sitting in a room, it was our quarterly meeting, and I looked out and I was one of two women, one of three women, one of two Black people. And they were trying to solve a problem that didn't really exist. And I remember saying to myself, like, this is so stupid. Like, why are we doing this? Why are you meeting about these things? Like, you're making decisions that affect people who look like me, but none of you really, like, you know, look like me. And I remember that day saying, like, God, I don't want to do this anymore. Mm. And got laid off from that position and then really went full-fledged into my freelance work. And at this point in my life, I'm really, really proud to say that I support three Black men. I've never in my career been able to say that the people that I support are Black men, entrepreneurs, leading organizations and, you know, their own, you know, kind of things. And that to me is a hallmark of my career. So shout out to Edwin, shout out to Jerry, shout out to Andre. Supporting you guys is an honor of my life. So that is the brag that I have on myself, that as a Black woman, I can say that I'm supporting Black men in this way. It means the world to me.
This right here. This is you. They can't see it. They can't see it. The reason why I sound like this, because I'm pumping. I'm doing an Arsenio Hall, kind of like a lateral, like it's, you know, it's not horizontal. It's vertical. It's like a tornado.
It's like a cyclone.
Yeah, it's like a cyclone.
I got a question for you. So years ago, you said that you asked Jeeves what the salary was for, you know, the highest paid administrative assistant at the time, and you set a benchmark. Did you hit that benchmark?
I hit it a year ago.
Less.
That's what I'm talking about right there.
No, beautiful. Love it.
That's gunshots in Brooklyn,
thank
y'all.
Thank you. Thank you.
Congratulations. Thank you so much for your voice. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for affirming. We didn't bring you on here to do all that, but you did anyway. Thank you.
You know?
Okay.
Freely we receive, so freely we have to give.
That's it. That's
thank you, Imani. Well, Imani, we are so grateful. I'm grateful. I love you. You know this. I've known you for all the years of your
all
life.
All of them. Every single one of them.
Every year that you have had in life, I have known you for. And I am so grateful to get to share just a little bit of your story with the world, with these Cashmeres. Cashmeres, thank you guys so much. We're really trying to make that stick. And so I hope you guys don't.
I feel like you should do a poll on Instagram about it. Mm-mm. Because somebody might have a more creative option.
The poll is not whether or not you like Cashmere. It's if you have a better idea for what people that listen to Casually Creative should be called, submit those. But until such time as that happens,
y'all
are Cashmeres. Mm. Y'all are Cashmeres right now. If y'all want to change it, come at us with some better names. And while you're doing that, subscribe, share, tell your friends about it, because we want their opinions about what they should be called as well. See what I did right there? Wrapped it all up.
I'm here for it.
Audience interaction.
No, but genuinely, please hit us up. Casually Creative. We really want to know all about you. We really want to know all about the things, where you're listening to us, and we're finding out that we're international. So if you're international, drop us a line, because we would love to hear more about you. I'm one of the hosts of Casually Creative, Damani Daniel, Chief Imaginator at The Event Nerd.
This is Byron Sanders, President and CEO of Big Thought.
Y'all stay dope.
Y'all stay dope.
Casually Creative was produced by Heather Daniel of SweetRebel.com. Its intro and outro music were composed by Ezekiel Daniel and produced by Marcus Reddick and Dean Talbert. Feel free to check us out online at www.casuallycreative.co.
Everyone living is a type of creative. Everyone's got a limit, they can create. Some people coding, for some people it's bacon. If you can see it in your mind, you can